This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Time for Lunch is a new podcast from HRN for curious young eaters, where we focus on the serious questions.
Aren't chickens tiny dinosaurs?
We get to know our favorite foods in unexpected ways.
We just like cheered like you would cheer for your classmate when they're rounding second base in softball. And we just like, peach, 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 peach. Yay, thank you, peaches.
Learn some new recipes and jokes.
What does a boxer's mom put in his lunch? A knuckle sandwich.
And load up on fun facts.
Experts estimate that there are between 1 and 2,000 types of insects eaten around the world.
So roll up your sleeves and dig in. Subscribe to Time for Lunch on your favorite podcast app so that you and your favorite young eater can catch up on the whole first season. New episodes of season 2 out each week. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a podcast that I'm going to eat a pretzel on with your hosts, Zara Tangora and
Nicole Bailey.
I take it from the sound of your voice that you don't like the sound of me eating a pretzel on air. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, should we end this right now or should we somehow come to a compromise?
The compromise is you stop eating the pretzels.
Okay, listen, I have half of a pretzel left. It's not a huge pretzel, but it's not a bite-sized pretzel. What should I do? Do you want me to put it down?
I think you should crush it beneath your heel.
Now listen, let's be reasonable here. We're both civilized people. Nicole, we're in the same state for the first time in how long? Like a month? You were away for quite some time.
Yeah, I was gone for about a month, I think.
I really missed you, and I continue to miss you because I haven't seen you face-to-face yet.
Well, it looks the same, I think. Except for I'm wearing glasses right now.
Ooh, samesies. I'm also wearing glasses.
Whoa.
Crazed. So, how does it feel to be back?
It's a pretty gross time to be back in New York.
I'm also drinking something. I'm having a flavored seltzer. Gross in terms of what? Hot?
Yeah.
Or just because the world is gross.
The world is gross.
Yeah.
New York is gross. Also, something happened while I was gone that's very mysterious, which is the feral cats that live outside my window are gone, all gone.
Oh, wow. That's a sign of the apocalypse.
Where did they go?
That's the first plague. First, all the cats disappear. Then locusts. Then it rains frogs, and that's when I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where they are. I don't know if they died, where their dead bodies are.
Huh.
I think I know where they are.
Where, Amanda?
So, have you heard in the news how there's just been, like, a surplus of dead rats in New York City just because they had nothing to eat?
Oh, no.
I heard that they were eating each other.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that. But I think probably the cats probably realized that there was that lack of food, and they just bounced.
Well, most feral cat colonies don't go anywhere because they're being fed, and these cats were being fed by my upstairs neighbor, so who's still out there? So it's weird that they would leave.
It is really weird.
Also, now there's so many more birds on my roof.
That's funny. Well,
I don't think the cats even ate the birds, they just scared them away.
It actually does kind of feel apocalyptic a little bit, like the bees disappearing. You know what I mean? You're like, ooh.
Yeah, it's just weird. They just, you know, I used to see them every day.
Yeah. Do you miss them?
Kind of.
Huh.
I just don't like change.
Change is hard for everyone, really, no matter what. I'm having a little bit of a crisis here right before the show. I decided I would cut up these, like, banana peppers that have been in my fridge for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to try to stuff them with some rice and then pickle the other half of them. I didn't think they'd be that spicy. But lo and behold, they were. I, like, touched my lips, but now my whole face is fucking burning.
And you were eating pretzels.
And I'm eating pretzels and drinking a Spindrift. Now, this is not an ad for Spindrift soda, but it could be. Spindrift, call us. Have you had this? This
yeah.
drink? I like it. In fact, I love it.
I'm like, whatever about it.
Oh, really?
It depends on the flavor, really.
I'm having a mango. Very into it.
Never had the mango. Mango's oh. really exploding in the beverage world, though. It seems that everything is mango flavored.
Really? A lot of mango this and mango that? I hadn't noticed. Do you remember Mango Madness? From Snapple?
Snapple? No. Yeah. I don't get into mango. Ugh.
Me neither. I really never fuck with mango, but I did love Mango Madness. I find a regular mango too hard to get into.
Well, you just never know if they're ripe or not, and an unripe mango is unchill.
Well, yeah, that's true. Unless it's like in a salad, I guess, with
sure.
like a savory kind of component to it. But I actually have this weird thing with mango, where like if I nibble on a mango pit, as you know, one might. At the end of the mango, I get, like, a weird reaction in my mouth.
Does your tongue get numb?
No, I get, like, blisters all over my fucking face.
That's
it's
common,
terrible.
That's a common thing that happens.
Oh, really? It's a common mango malady?
Yeah. there's some people just have a weird reaction to the mango.
No, that's mango madness. But why only the pit, I wonder? Somebody tell me.
I don't know. I'm not a... whatever, mango doctor.
You didn't get your doctorate in mangoology? I don't even know why we're friends in that case. I thought you knew more about mangoes. I don't know. Anyway, we should just end this podcast now. If you tuned in for riveting mango content, you've come to the wrong place.
I think this is riveting.
That's true. It is exciting. So what is your favorite thing about being back? Is there anything exciting for you about having returned?
Wait, what? You cut out.
I says, what's your favorite thing about being back in New York City? Anything posy?
No.
Oh, wow. Doomsday snare.
It's just like, you know, horrible here. I did get to babysit my friend's baby for 14 hours. That was pretty fun.
Oh, that's cute. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I think it's a horrible time. I actually really enjoy the very hot, blazing, scorching lava hot weather. So for me, that's not so bad. Plus, I just really like New York City. It's certainly not the best time in history, to say the least.
I just feel like my neighborhood is not very nice to be in when it's hot. And
right.
Yeah.
I feel you, dog. I smell what the rock is cooking. It's cod.
Right.
I took a long walk the other day. I think I mentioned to you. I walked 18 miles round trip on like a 95 degree day.
Nope.
For some god unknown reason.
Why did you do it? Why?
Why did I? Because I have a lot of anxiety and no job. And so really all I can feel like I can do at this point to kind of get out of my old brain box and be physical. And like, I feel like I do some of my best thinking when I'm walking. I know for a lot of folks, it happens on the toilet. Really for me, it happens while I'm walking. So I walked from my house to Brighton Beach and back, and I stopped at Tafara on the way back and got some pizza, which really made it worth it. But it might've been too long. I had a really bad headache when I got home. And
did they have slices at Tafara?
Yeah. They have slices. Yeah. Since forever, they've always had slices.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people don't get slices. I mean, not most people, but if you're going to make the trek out there, it's like, might as well get a pie. But I was alone, so I was going to get a pie. I was fucking walked 18 miles. I could have eaten a pie easily.
It'd be really funny, though, but then you'd have to walk home with a huge box of pizza.
A huge pie. Yeah. So I didn't do that. But I did do something that I wanted to run by you because I'm a bit concerned that I may have been cursed on this
Uh-oh.
Walk. Yeah.
Did you say something bad to someone?
No, heavens no. Worse though. So I didn't really have to pee, but as we've both, I think, experienced this in the past couple months, like when we were walking off for protesting and now in New York City, as in many places, there's no like public bathrooms available. So I have like more than I actually have to pee, because when you're walking that far, you don't really have to pee because you're sweating so much. But I get anxiety that I will later in the walk. So it's kind of like, I'm like, if I see a spot that I can pee, I'm like, I might as well now, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm walking down Ocean Parkway in like the Hasidic or Orthodox area, which is actually a huge swath of area. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking by this like crazy old Orthodox cemetery. And I walk in, I'm like poking around, looking around. It was really cool in there. And then I was like, I should pee because I'm all alone.
Oh, I've been in there too, because I went to that park over there.
Okay.
So yeah, you can just walk right into the cemetery.
Right. I peed in there. And then when I left, I immediately felt as though I had been cursed. Do you think that's possible? Is it terrible to pee in a cemetery? How do we feel about this?
It feels like a bad idea. I'm a little bit superstitious, though. I always try to hold my breath when I drive by a cemetery.
Yeah. I'm not... I don't condone it either. I don't condone it either at all, and I regret it very much. But, well, like...
it would have been really bad if someone... Because I went in there to poke around, too, and then I saw this couple driving away. Like, they had been looking at me and trying to tell if I was Jewish or not, because I was, like, walking around all the graves. Which are really overgrown and full of bugs.
Yeah, there was a lot of bugs. And, like, I didn't pee, like, on a grave. I peed on, like a little walkway, like, under a tree.
On the sidewalk?
No, not on the sidewalk. Just, like, there's, like, little paths. You know what I mean? So you can walk to the graves. I peed on the path, like, not on someone's grave. No, it was grass.
Oh, okay. Got it. I mean, that seems fine to me. But there can be bodies. Plus, I'm half Jewish.
That's true. But then I had this like crazy thought when I left that maybe like everyone at some point in their life has something terrible happen to them, because inevitably we've all peed on a grave at some point, because there's so many bodies buried under places that aren't just in graveyards at this point. But like inevitably everyone's peed on somebody's like dead body. And therefore I'm wondering if like people have horrible things happen to their lives because we've all like defecated and peed at some point on someone's grave.
No, that would be...
That's too fringe?
Well, I just feel like horrible things don't always happen to people. So.
That's true. Well, I mean, most people have one bad thing happen in their life.
Interestingly, I was doing the research on the origins of my hometown, and I found out that the park that I played in as a child is still there. Was the home of a small church cemetery, and they allegedly moved the bodies when they built the park, but maybe they didn't, just like in Poltergeist. So that's pretty cool.
Wow. Do you feel like you were haunted as a child?
Mm-mm.
No,
I just went to the park, and then on July, we had our fireworks on July 3rd.
Oh,
so everyone can go to them. That was scary because I didn't like fireworks as a kid, but that's the only time I was ever scared in that park.
Interesting. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Okay. I feel like, I think you know this, but I'm not sure if our one listener is aware. So when my dad died, I went down to North Carolina to his house, and he was like very particular about his house. It was all like set up like the way he wanted. He had a lot of collections and a lot of art. It was very like all put together very specifically. And like, you know, we were like breaking down the house and like packing everything up, and on the last night we were there, I was with Becky and Breton, and in the middle of the night, like, we all felt like this terrible weird feeling and like a cool breeze, and then all the tin toys started going off in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's scary.
It was scary. I'm like, I think my dad wouldn't have wanted to scare us, but I felt like the energy was weird, and he wouldn't have wanted people to see his house in that way. So that's the closest ghost experience I have had. But I'm seeking more, if any ghosts out there. I'm very lonely. Seeking ghosts. Wouldn't that be a funny person allowed to put out?
I think that it's been put out. That lady, like, married a ghost.
Whom?
I don't know. She's like a lady. She's a little bit famous. She had sex with a ghost and then married the ghost.
Oh, ghost sex. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the follow-up to Ghost Dad.
Yeah, it would be the prequel. right?
The prequel to Ghost Town. Right. So what else is up? Should we get into our topic, or do you have anything else that you want to say first?
No, let's get into our topic.
Okay, good, because mine's long today.
Mine might be long. This might be like a 6-hour-long episode. It's fine.
Holy shit, Amanda. Fucking hold on to your butt.
4 extra hours.
Okay, cool. Yay, we're doing beaches. The beach is our topic today.
The beach. Not beaches, the movie, unfortunately.
Or the movie The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio. I detailed everything Leonardo DiCaprio ate while on vacation in Thailand in the movie The Beach.
Well, I wanted to, because my part doesn't mention food at all, so I wanted to incorporate food into this so that people don't unsubscribe.
Okay, good.
So I wanted to play my favorite game with you, which is, what is the most hilarious or inappropriate food to bring to a hot summer beach trip?
Lasagna.
Spaghetti and meatballs.
I was going to say that. Did you say spaghetti and meatballs with what?
What else? I have baked Alaska.
Okay.
Cans of green beans.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Pudding.
Uh-huh. Pudding is terrible.
Hot soup. Oatmeal. Chili.
Okay.
Macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, that's... Well, yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I don't know. I'm on the fence about this one.
Like baked macaroni and cheese that was cold. You know what I mean? Like a slice. I could see maybe being workable.
Sure. Like hot macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, no thanks.
In a hot dish.
Sure.
Mashed potatoes. Which then just led me down a whole other category, which is, I think that all Thanksgiving foods are bad to bring to a hot beach.
Yeah, day. I was going to say a whole turkey.
A pumpkin pie, a pecan pie.
A stuffing.
Cranberry sauce, maybe it would be okay.
Yeah, maybe.
And then green bean casserole. Really, green beans have no place on the beach.
Yeah, I guess like a green bean salad. I can mess right. with that.
Oh, yeah, green bean salad. You did bring that to the beach.
Yeah, do you want me to give you my answers?
Yes.
Okay, like a full shawarma that you have to, that's still spinning. You have to slice it.
Yeah.
Matzo ball soup. I guess that's a hot soup. That's already been covered. As I mentioned before, lasagna. An ice cream cake.
Yeah, I mean, baked Alaska pretty much covers.
That's true. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to rip your shit off.
Yeah, it's settled down.
Ooh, this is so good. I wish I had had more time to think of it. I guess chicken pot pie. I guess if I had to say something, I would have to say chicken pot pie. Belgian waffles. Belgian waffles with whipped cream. Ooh, eggs Benedict.
Yeah, jiggly eggs Benedict. Scrambled eggs also not a good idea.
Yeah, no, definitely not scrambled eggs. I guess sesame chicken.
Lo mein.
Look, congee. Would not be great.
Dim sum.
Yeah, dim sum, no.
I guess buns would work well, though, actually.
Buns could work. Yeah, buns could work. Like roast beast. yeah, those are... Oh, of course, our favorite. Period blood-laced Dinty Moore beef stew.
Yes. Also, like, a porterhouse.
Yeah. A baked potato. What about twice baked potato? That would be terrible on the beach.
I think that would be fine. I was like, oh, baked potato, that's terrible. But actually, that's very portable.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Let's see. Shrimp cocktail? No, that'd be good. Although, you know, if you could keep it cold, I guess that would be good.
I guess it depends on the beach setting. Like, if you're in, like, a cabana, that's fine.
Yeah, that would be fine. I'd like to think of one more funny one before
we... Because you eat ceviche, you know, on the beach.
Yeah, you definitely eat ceviche on the beach. That's true. I'll think of one at, like, a really inappropriate time and just blurt it out.
Fish sticks would not be good.
fish sticks.
Or like a frozen pizza.
Yeah, that would be difficult. I guess like a whole meatloaf. Oh, a TV dinner. Mm-hmm. A TV dinner would be terrible. I think that might be the worst. All right, cool. So those are all disgusting foods to eat on the beach. That is a great question. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes,
please, submit your guys' worst beach foods to us on Instagram, @kizzy.
Yeah. And then we can put it, because this is going to be a two-parter, right?
Yeah, so it will be a two-parter. We'll mention it in our next week's ep.
Great. So I'm going to talk about Jacob Reef Beach.
Okay, cool. Never been. And
a little bit about the man himself, but not that much. Okay, so Jacob Reese Beach was underwater until like 1878. So,
whoa.
Until then, nobody even knew that was land under there. They're just like, yeah, that's just the ocean. But then in 1878, something happened. The earth turned on its axis or whatever. And then the isthmus or whatever appeared. And then,
The isthmus?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just making sure. Chill isthmus.
In 1879, some business dudes were like, let's make this into a theme park. It's going to have a horse track. It's going to have hotels. There's going to be a pavilion. And they're like, this is great. So they bought 1,500 acres of the land, and they decided to call up Fred Olmsted, who everyone knows is the designer of Central Park.
Good old class, typical Fred.
And they're like, Fred, take a look. What can you do out here? They built the hotel called the Hotel Imperial. And this is a theme. They opened the hotel even though it wasn't completed.
Oh.
It was what they did back then, I guess. They opened that hotel in 1881. But then the business dudes went bankrupt. And they just tore the hotel right down.
Really? Wow, that's very Costner of them.
Yeah, and so then they kind of basically were like, okay, never mind, we're not going to do any of that shit, and who cares about this place? But then they put in a streetcar, which is no longer there, but the streetcar went from one end of the Rockaways to the other, which would have been really cool to have present day, but
yeah,
whatever. Then in 1900, Edward P. Hatch bought 1,000 acres of that area. It was marshland and meadows, and he was like, I'm going to build a beach as a part of the Jacob Riis Association for Improving the Conditions of the Poor. So Jacob Riis was like this activist journalist guy.
Okay.
And he was all like, listen, people who are poor have really shitty lives. Look at these pictures of people living in tenement housing in the East Village or whatever. And he's like, I want to help them have better lives. And so a lot of people were like, yeah, this guy's great or whatever. But some people criticized him and said that the part of the reason why people were living in such horrible conditions is because the crappy living situation allowed them to save up all of their money so they could get the rest of their family over to America, and then they could move somewhere else at a different time. Basically, he was imposing his own white dude ideas onto these poor folks and using that as a way to sort of reform things, which, as we now know, is not the best way to go about it.
Right.
But they decided to name this beach after him anyway. They didn't want to buy it from... Okay, so basically, he's like, I want to turn this into a beach. But the city was like, well, we're going to turn it into a beach, and we're going to call it the Jacob Reese Beach. But we're not going to buy it from you, Edward, because you're charging us $1 million for what is essentially $200,000 worth of land. So they just waited for him to die. So then he died. And so then, so basically, this is 1900. 13 years later, they finally get the beach ready to go, and they set up jetties which catch tidal sand. So basically that's how the beach is formed in some ways. It's like they set up those jetties and it catches the tidal sand, and then that adds acreage to the beach. So after 2 years they had added 10 acres to the beach.
Whoa, that's amazing. Crazy? That's very interesting about the jetties. Like, yeah, I had no idea. Is the beach at Jacob Reese, actually I have been there one time, but it was like 8 years ago and it was on a rainy day. Is the beach really small there, like the amount of sand?
It's not that small. It's, I think it's fine. I usually go to the Tilden side, but
right, That's where I was at Tilden, and I remember it being small, but I could be wrong. So it seems like a blur. I have a very, very, very bad long-term memory.
And yeah, so, I mean, I think that the beach is fine. Also, the beach in front of the pavilion or bathhouse or whatever is pretty big now.
Okay.
Even when the tide comes up. But anyways, 1913, they set up the jetties. The sand gets, you know, all stuck in there, and they're like, yay. But then World War I happens, and they stopped developing it. So it became like a little park, basically, mm-hmm. with a beach, but it never turned into like this big development they had planned because of the war. So then the war happens. The Navy's like, give us this area for all of our naval shit, man. And they made Fort Tilden out of that. And they made like the place where the planes take off. It was a big war area, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, World War I happens. And then in 1930, the Navy gives the park back to the city. And that's when they build that humongous bathhouse that was inspired by the one at Jones Beach that was built by crazy old Robbie Moses.
Oh, good old Robert Moses. Terrible human at large.
It had a restaurant inside of it. It had a solarium. And at this point, Whoa. The car lot had been expanded to 5,000. It could hold 5,000 cars, which is amazing to me because it's 1930. So
that's crazy.
I know. Wild.
That's a lot of cars.
I mean, I guess you probably don't remember this, but the parking lot at Jacob Riis's is the biggest parking lot I've ever seen in my entire life. You could land a plane in it.
Really? No, I don't remember it at all. Like I said, I was only there like once, and it seems like a dream. It might have actually been a dream, to be honest.
What if it was a dream?
What if this was all a dream? It was like on the 4th of July, like in maybe the year 2011, it was like raining. And the only, I remember I was with like Amelia, who used to be the head baker at Brucey, and then Amanda as well, and some other people. That's all I remember.
Good story. Okay.
I know. So there I was.
They built this huge bathhouse, which I don't know if you remember, but it's this huge structure that they built, and made the car lot, so it had 5,000 cars. At that point, they were having 25,000 visitors per day at that ding-dang beach.
Whoa.
Then, in 1936, they made the beach bigger by stealing 2 million cubic yards of sand from Jamaica Bay and sticking it on their beach.
How do you get it? That's a pretty sneaky thing to steal, like 25 million pounds of sand. How do you get away with that? You're like, look over there.
Well, it's cubic yards, which to me is a meaningless phrase. So I have no idea how much that actually is.
Well, a yard is 3 feet. So 3 feet by 3 feet.
Yeah. So they made the beach bigger. And then, you know, in the 30s, Robert Moses was fighting with the city a lot to try to figure out what to do. He wanted to make it bigger, put a swimming pool in there. And then people were like, no, we don't want outsiders coming into our town, like from other parts of New York, you know, like racism.
Yes.
And so it kind of just stayed the way it was indefinitely. Until, not indefinitely, it stayed the same the way people would go out there. But in the 60s, by the time the 60s happened, the beach is in complete disrepair. It has debris all over it.
No, debris.
There are toilet troubles in the bathhouse. And there are crime problems. An 8-year-old was fatally stabbed there in 1962.
Oh, my God.
The memorial bust of Jacob Riis was stolen in 1964.
Imagine. Just stealing a bust, not just like knocking it down, like taking it with you.
Where is it? I hope somebody still has that thing.
If you guys have the bust, please call into the show.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's do a whole podcast about the missing Jacob Riis bust.
Riis or bust.
And, you know, there were drugs and there was naked people. So apparently Jacob Riis has always been like kind of a naked place. Mm. But they... It was concerning to, you know, in the 60s, everyone's like, oh, my God, naked people are bad. So they were mad about that. But
naked people are bad.
Also, 80 people were stung by man-o-wars in 1 year.
What? What's happening over there? Jesus Christ.
In the 70s, they tried to crack down on nude bathing. So they tried to make it illegal to bathe nude there. And they passed some, like, laws where you could get a ticket for it, but basically what the Wikipedia article said is that the Park Service guys would just be like, if they're minding their own business, we're not going to cite them for being naked at the beach, which is pretty chill.
That's nice.
In 1976, they closed the beach because there was raw sewage there in the water.
Yeah.
In 1978, they closed the beach because there was an oil spill. In 1988, they closed the beach because there were 8 syringes washed up on the shore. And that was happening at beaches all across New York, apparently.
Glorious. That was quite a time to be alive.
In 1991, they had to close the beach because it was full of medical waste, including syringes and vials of painkillers. In 1983, the squares finally got their way and nude bathing was banned, but it didn't stop it for 1 second.
Wow.
And it still continues today, although it now, I believe, well, topless bathing is legal in New York, but...
No peens.
Full naked is not legal.
Zero peen. So that means, like, it's not really fair for people with peens who want to show their peen.
Yeah. I mean...
By peen, I mean penis.
I went to the beach over in New Jersey that's fully nude, and I honestly saw too many peens. It was a little much for me.
Yeah, dude, there's a nude beach. There's a nude beach, like, when you're walking from Robert Moses Beach to Kismet, and we used to do that when I was a kid, and you'd have to walk through the nude beach. And I remember the first time I remember, like, seeing a peen, there was a dude who was, like, laying with his back and butt to us, and I looked over, and his, like, penis and balls were, like, pushed through his legs, and I was so confused. I was like, you know, 7 or 8. I was like, what is that? And I was like, that's a pervert.
Oh, yeah.
That there is a pervert.
Yeah. The people on the beach that I went to were just a lot of them, totally naked guys, all in their middle age, and just standing on the beach, naked. All of them standing. No one's just laying down. Standing around.
Probably all got home. They were like, I'm going to go show off my peen today. And they got home and it was like sunburned. And then we'll see who has the last laugh. The sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, they cleaned up the beach. Hillary Clinton was involved. Cost a lot of money. They kept starting and stopping. They would, like, they put, like, a couple million into renovating the bathhouse and then stop.
I'm just picturing Hillary Clinton picking up trash with one of those, like, sticks with a poker on the end.
No, she's just, like, fighting for money in Congress. She's not going out to the beach. She doesn't give a shit.
Sure.
But, yeah. So, you know, the beach is sort of, like, a metaphor for government and how it's stupid and also how the world started using drugs and medical waste.
Interesting.
But now the beach is super nice. They renovated it all and they got all that new hipster money going in there, and now you have a bunch of restaurants and the beach is clean, and except for the part where you can't sit anywhere because of the stupid puffin birds that were trying to, or no,
there's piping plovers.
Yeah, the plovers.
Yep. You gotta save those plovers. I don't know why, but we do.
It's like share the road, plovers. But, yeah, it's all fancy and shiny and new, and the bathhouse, you know, is renovated. You can't... Most of the bathhouse is now used for little vendors and stuff, but...
oh, cool.
Yeah. That's nice. That's the story.
I gotta get out there. I've never been... I mean, I've... Again, we don't know if I've been in reality or in a dream, but I should go. I'm very, like, picky and snobby about the beach. I only go to Robert Moses, but that's not even because I'm snobby. It's really just because I'm a creature of habit, and I have a problem with change. I have a problem with change, and I grew up going there. And we should change the name of that beach because Robert Moses sucks. He's a bad he was a bad person, and he's still a bad person because he's a vampire, and he's still alive.
Oh, he is?
No, he's dead. He's long gone. But, yeah, we need to change the name of that beach. That's a great story. Should we take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Bye! Come back, please, please!
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years.
Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We're back at it. And I've got something to say, God damn it. I'm also going to tell a story about a person from history. I'm also going to tell the story of Jacob Riis. Just kidding. But the untold story. I'm going to talk about today. So I started researching like food from the Jersey Shore. And admittedly, I don't have much experience with the Jersey Shore. We would go down to AC maybe a couple times when I was a kid. I remember going one time we stayed in a hotel and there was like a Republican convention there, awesomely enough. And cool. It was so cool. It was great. And that's where I met my husband. No, I was a kid and I remember seeing Dave Thomas, the founder of Wendy's, was there. And I was like, it was probably the first celebrity I ever saw except for Chevy Chase and Billy Joel. And I was just like, whoa! And there's like a roller coaster inside the hotel we were at. And I thought it was chill. And then I remember going to Wawa for the first time. And I had like a hamster and I kept it in my pocket. And that's basically all I remember.
You took a hamster to Atlantic City?
I know. Is that weird? I don't know why. Maybe I got it there. Oh, and I remember also choking on a mozzarella stick and like having to pull the cheese out of my throat.
Yeah, those all-American experience.
Yeah, dude, those are... Why do we fucking have that? It's like the most dangerous food. It like should not
it's
be allowed.
It's good, though.
It's
like
mad good. It's mad good. It's mad good. So I started looking...
I didn't know that Atlantic City is considered part of the Jersey Shore.
Oh, yeah, babe. Oh, yeah. It's part of the. It's part of the shore. Go down the shore. As people from Jersey like to say. And okay. I think also Pennsylvania.
I watched the Jersey Shore.
You know what? I didn't watch the Jersey Shore, really.
And I'm not even like a reality TV person. I don't typically enjoy it. But it was more like, except for I did like The Real World a lot.
Oh, hell yeah, of course. True story.
Road rules and The Real World Road Rules Challenge. Like, yeah, that.
For sure. Puck.
Yeah, totally. And Pedro, rest in peace. Right. But Jersey Shore, to me, was kind of just like an extension of The Real World because they all lived together and they all partied together. So I feel it's just like The Real World Jersey.
Never saw it. I'm assuming they also all gave each other chlamydia.
I don't know if they date each other, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, they probably just gave other people chlamydia. Anyway, I'm not talking about them, but maybe I will next week. I started looking up food from the Jersey Shore. I went on a real indoor hotel roller coaster ride with this, okay, where deciding my topic, and I think you're going to love where I landed. So I am going to talk about food, but not until the end, so just hold your breath the entire time like you would as though you're peeing in a cemetery. So I'm going to talk about the Prohibition era in Atlantic City and most
like some TV show.
Yes, exactly, like the TV show, and most specifically who the TV show was based on, Nucky Johnson, who was known as Nucky Thompson on the show, but his name in real life was Nucky Johnson.
Confusing.
Yes. So I got my information today from mostly from Wikipedia and also an All That's Interesting article called The Wildlife of Mobster Nucky Johnson and His Real Life Boardwalk Empire by Amy Lamoureux. So here's a little bit of I want to tell you, start to tell you a little bit about like Atlantic City in general, and then we'll talk about Prohibition, and then we'll talk about Nucky. So, Atlantic City becomes incorporated in 1854. And in 1853, the first commercial hotel was called the Belleau House, and it was built at the intersection of Massachusetts and Atlantic Avenues in Atlantic City. And then the next year when it was incorporated was also the year when the Camden Line began train service, and so that ran between Trenton and Atlantic City. So it kind of made it possible for people from New York and everywhere to get there easier. I don't know if you remember on the TV show, but like there weren't even highways really. People were just like, you know, driving down the shore and like on dirt roads and stuff.
Oh, I thought I thought you meant the Jersey Shore reality TV show.
Yes.
And I was like, yep, that's what it was like. It's definitely set in the 1920s.
Yeah, during the early aughts, there was only dirt roads. Picture it. It was crazy. Okay. So Prohibition in the United States was a nationwide constitutional ban on alcohol production, importation, transportation, and sale. And it lasts between 1920 and 1933. Now, I was reading...
Sorry, I just have one small aside. Okay. I was listening to something where they were talking about this. Because it's totally insane that we did this as a country. Like
It is insane.
And it's really interesting to think about from the opposite perspective. Like, we want to do huge sweeping change now, you know? But people are like, but what about all those jobs? But, like, all the major beer brewers, which was a huge portion of, like, Brooklyn and wherever else they were brewing.
Milwaukee and, yeah.
They all shut down their factories and everyone lost their jobs because of Prohibition.
It is really crazy. But the thing about, like, you know, of course, it's insane. And it obviously didn't work, and criminalizing vices, as we know, is not good. But in the like small defense of Prohibition, I think that it was a time when people got drunk in a very different way than they got drunk today. Like, you know, back in that time, people were getting like so fucking fucked up, and the whole temperance movement had a lot to do, like, you know, the women involved in the temperance movement were like sick of being like beaten to like a pulp by their drunk husbands.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, are you going to go into Prohibition?
No, I'm not. I think we should save that and maybe do a whole episode on it. But it is interesting. I'm obviously not for Prohibition, but that side of the argument. So anyway, the Prohibition was also known as the Volstead Act, which was named for Minnesota Representative Andrew Volstead. And he was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee who championed the bill. So following the ban, criminal gangs gained control of beer and liquor sale. Obviously, we know, like, you know, the messy kind of criminals, like the Al Capones of that time, or the people who were, like, running stuff. And in Atlantic City, they basically, like, didn't pay any attention to Prohibition. They just kept on selling alcohol. By the late 1920s, people were, like, really against it. They were very sick of it. So about 10 years in, out of a 13-year span, critics attacked the policy, saying that it lowered local revenues, and it imposed rural Protestant religious values on urban America, which is very true.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's like a non-separation of church and state. There has to be simply a better way to get people's husbands to stop.
And it's also an example of how really Americans just can't let go of their puritanical roots.
100%. Right, and I mean, unfortunately, we still suffer under that same kind of puritanical idealization, and that is intertwined in our government with, you know, obviously abortion and a million other things. People cannot somehow separate themselves from their religion and realize that we don't all celebrate your religion or follow it or whatever you call it. I don't know anything about religion. So anyway, Prohibition ended in 1833 on December 5th with the ratification of the 21st Amendment, which repealed the 18th Amendment. And to this day, it's the only time in American history in which a constitutional amendment was passed for the purpose of repealing another, which I think
really interesting. I also, my favorite name of a liquor store, which is in Indiana, is called the 21st Amendment Liquors. And I just think it's
that's hilarious. Cool.
I'm like, you guys, look at you.
That's amazing.
The 21st Amendment, making me look up what that is when I'm 16.
So cool. That's fun. So yeah, Atlantic City like did not follow this at all. They had a completely tourist-based economy, and they like all the hotels and all the like people who were in charge in the local government in the city like encouraged business owners to provide whatever it was that they needed to make their visitors happy. Yeah. Because people weren't going to just come there and not drink. So
wealthy people also had no problem getting liquor and keeping liquor, and also different places in the South apparently just never really
never paid attention to it. Interesting. We should do a whole episode on
prohibition. Let's do that. That'd be fun.
Maybe we'll do it like after this to follow up. So also the city's beachfront location and the docks like made it a really ideal place to bring for rum runners to like bring booze in. So it was kind of just like the perfect place. So, and then there was also a powerful city boss who allegedly controlled everything from smuggling operation to law enforcement to the restaurants where the alcohol was served. He was in charge of basically everything in Atlantic City, and he did everything very much wide out in the open and flagrantly violated the law. And this man's name was Enoch Lewis Nucky Thompson, Nucky Johnson, and he was born January 20th, 1883. And he was like a political boss. So he started as a elected sheriff, and shortly after he was appointed to the position of Atlanta County Republican Executive Committee Secretary. So do you remember in the show, like the Commodore or whatever, not the bar where we like to eat nachos at, but the Commodore in the show? Did you watch the show?
I did watch the show, but I don't remember it very well.
Okay. So yeah, on the show, this guy, the Commodore, was supposed to be, you know, this like imposing figure in real life. He was kind of the same. He had been the boss of Nucky Johnson. Nucky took his job over. Then Nucky became the county treasurer. So he had like access to all the loot. And he was just basically, he ran the town. Like, very similarly to the show, although they say, in what I was reading, they say that he never actually killed anyone in real life. I mean, we don't really know that. But on the show, it showed that he had killed a bunch of people.
Right. But, including his wife's husband, kind of.
Yeah. I don't remember. But you know what? I'm going to rewatch it because I loved that show. It was amazing. And I really want to rewatch it now that I've been reading
it. You know, I think the beginning is good. I think the end, it kind of just, I've never actually finished it because the
end just
kind of goes off the rails or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't finish it either, but it was really cool.
Yeah. I also just remember when it was filming all the time over in Greenpoint at those studios. Right.
Yeah. But this sounds like an amazing time in history that I would love to go back to. So yeah, he was in charge of everything. Atlantic City was called the world's playground at the time, and it was definitely that. So they were bootlegging, they were in charge of gambling and sex work operations. So he said his influence and power in the city was like kind of just the utmost. He was basically like the unofficial mayor of the city. In fact, his income came from the percentage of, he got a cut of every single gallon of liquor. He got a cut of every single gambling operation, and he got a cut of every single sex work operation in the whole city.
Nice.
So apparently he made like $500,000 a year in that time's money, like 20s money, which today is like $8 million a year just from the cuts that he got off the top of things.
That's good living.
Isn't that crazy? He rode a chauffeur-driven powder blue limousine and wore expensive clothes, including a $1,200, at that time, raccoon coat.
Nice.
Full draped in raccoons. I mean, status symbol. Raccoon fur. Anyway, his personal trademark was a red carnation that he would get fresh every day. He lived at the Ritz-Carlton on the boardwalk. And he was either referred to as the Czar of the Ritz or the Prisoner of the Ritz. But people really liked him. He was, like, well-loved. He was benevolent. He was generous. He was quoted as saying, "When I lived well, everybody lived well." And under his rule, it was one of the leading ports for prosperity. And during that time, but also, obviously, for bootlegging. So then this next part I think is very interesting. In 1927, he agrees to participate in a loose organization of other bootleggers and racketeers on the East Coast, forming the Big Seven or Seven Group. Now, I tried to look up like who was in the Big Seven or Seven Group, and I couldn't really figure it out. But when I clicked on, there was like very vague to no specific information about this. But when I clicked on the link from Wikipedia, this group was also referred to as Murder, Inc.
Nah.
By themselves, yeah. And it was an organized crime group in the 1930s and 40s that acted as the enforcement arm of the Italian-American mafia, Jewish mob, and connected organized crime groups in New York City and elsewhere. And so a couple of members that are pretty notorious of this Big Seven group were Bugsy Siegel, Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, Vito Genovese, Johnny Torrio, and Al Capone.
Cool.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Very cool.
Well, Al Capone is in the show, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is in the show. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And the guy who plays him is great. He's so good. He's actually like British, I think.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's not an Italian American guy, but he plays him really well. The show is really fucking good. I really do want to watch it again. His top enforcer was the powerful Fourth Ward boss and former Ritz-Carlton bellhop, Jimmy Boyd. So that's the guy who I'm talking about, who the young guy with the mushroom cut who is always at Roman's. I just can't remember his name.
Michael Pitt.
Yes. Okay.
He is in a relationship with one of the supermodel regulars at Marlowe & Sons.
Oh, really? And he was, on the show kind of, oddly, maybe screwing his mom. It was pretty weird, but...
Yeah, who is, what's her name, though? She's always in old-timey shows.
I know, I can't remember her name. Gretchen Mol.
Yeah. And then, spoiler alert, she maybe has to kill him.
Oh, really?
Or no, she doesn't kill him.
I thought Somebody he killed her. All right, so by the late 1920s, Jimmy Boyd was running every speakeasy, illegal casino, numbers racket, and brothel in the entire city. So this is kind of how the downfall of Nucky Johnson happens, which I think is very interesting. So Nucky Johnson was allegedly becoming very close to a showgirl who William Randolph Hearst was, dating on the side, his girlfriend.
Oh.
And William Randolph Hearst and Nucky Johnson apparently had very bad blood. So Hearst
He's also the bad guy in Deadwood. It's just, not a good guy.
Right. Oh, wait. The actor?
No. William Randolph Hearst is the bad guy in Deadwood.
How is that possible? That timing doesn't add up. Deadwood's, in the 1800s.
It's in the late 1800s. It goes into the 1900s.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. I don't remember anything about Deadwood except for that guy with the mustache. I should also rewatch that.
I think maybe he was a younger man, but the year 1900 and the year 1920 are only 20 years apart.
Yeah, so no, that makes perfect sense. I feel you. I smell what the rock is cooking. Again, it's cod. So bad blood existed between them, and Hearst apparently started publishing things about Nucky, mentioning him in articles about Vice in Atlantic City.
Oh, sorry. So George Hearst is his dad. He's the bad guy in Deadwood.
Okay, that makes more sense. So William Randolph Hearst, Nucky Johnson, enemies. Basically, William Randolph Hearst, outs him. I mean, not that... It's, a public secret. It's not, that anybody, doesn't know what Nucky's up to. But basically, because he puts it in print, it kind of holds the police to task. And so that's kind of one of the ways in which he ends up getting fucked over and taken down. So Johnson was the focus of an investigation by the feds because of this, as a result of Hearst. And Hearst was also lobbying Roosevelt's administration to do something about Nucky Johnson, which I just think that's very interesting. In 1933... Prohibition ends, and so it eliminates the need for that kind of bootlegging alcohol sales. So that's one knock against him. He also gets a property lien filed against him for owed back taxes that he earned in 1927. So 1933 is a very bad year for Nucky Johnson. And then on May 10th, so he's kind of like dealing with all this for a couple of years. On May 10th, 1939, he's indicted for evading taxes in the amount of $125,000. And that times money, so it's probably about $1 million around that today.
Dang.
Yeah. They have a two-week trial, concludes in July 1941. He's convicted and sentenced to 10 years in federal prison and fined $20,000. He only serves 4 years of his sentence. The $20,000 in today's money is like $285,000. He serves 4 years of sentence. Then he gets out and he like is still has like a great life. He gets married like right before he goes to prison. He gets out. He still wears nice clothes and blah, 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 blah. He's fine. He ends up dying of natural causes at age 85 in his sleep at the Atlanta County Convalescence Home, which doesn't sound very good. That sounds like not a great place to be. But
maybe it was nice.
Who knows? But anyway, he dies in his sleep. And so what I want to talk about with food. So there's tons of old restaurants in New Jersey in general, but like a lot of cool old restaurants down the shore and some that are in Atlantic City that are pretty awesome. And I want to talk about one specifically. So our friend Jenny mentioned this to me a couple of years ago. I don't know if she ever told you, but her and Dan, actually right before Dan ended up getting pneumonia all that time back and almost died, they went to Atlantic City and they went to this place called the Knife and Fork Inn,
mm-hmm.
which is like one of the oldest opened, I think. It says 1912, but then in my reading, it was actually like opened even before that, I think in the 1800s. It's the craziest look it up right now, the Knife and Fork Inn. It's the craziest looking building. It's so cool and so intricate. But basically, this Knife and Fork Inn was like the inspiration for the place Babette's that's in Boardwalk Empire, which wasn't like a real place, but it was kind of based on this place, the Knife and Fork Inn.
Oh, wow. It's crazy.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool. So it's a restaurant. It's located at Atlantic and Pacific Avenues in Atlantic City. And it was first opened in 1912 as a private club by the Commodore, the guy who is the guy from the show and the real guy who Nucky Johnson took over for. Mm. So it was established by the mayor at the time of Atlantic City. His name was William Riddle and his associates as an exclusive men's drinking and dining club. Pretty crazy. It was, like, just supposed to be, like, very, like, well-built and very beautiful. Apparently, like, the whole thing is made, constructed using copper nails, like, rust-proof copper nails, which is just kind of amazing. It has stucco walls, gables, and terracotta roof modeled after the Flemish architecture that Riddle had seen in Belgium and the Netherlands. So on the second floor, there's dining alcoves for privacy and like God knows what else went in there. There's a women's lounge upstairs because women were not allowed to go in the bar area, which is also true of Keen's. And it's still at Keen's. There's not allowed to be any women bartenders. Isn't that fucked up? In the main bar. Yeah. No women bartenders.
That's crazy.
I don't know how that's still allowed. It's pretty insane. They can bartend upstairs, but not in the main bar. So anyway, there was like gambling and all this shit going on. So part of the reason that this place like was the place as soon as Prohibition kicked in, they're like, we're fucking like holding it down on the Knife and Fork. They have managed to avoid raids because they were protected by Nucky Johnson, and the bar was, however, it was raided like in, I guess, 1927, and membership went down after that, and then a new family took over, the Latzes, and throughout until like the 90s, the Latzes owned it, and they made it into like a nice restaurant. They took the bar out during Prohibition. I guess they must have put it back in afterwards, and they kind of battled over the place for a long time, and eventually the Doherty family took it over, who were the longtime proprietors of a place called Doc's Oyster House, which has been in Atlantic City since 1897. And they still own it.
Really?
Yeah, they still own it. And it's like a fancy, super like Keen's-like. I was looking at them. I wanted to try to find the original menu, but I couldn't find it anywhere. But the menu now is just like, you know, it looks awesome. You can like make anything Oscar style, which is like adding crab meat and like béarnaise sauce to it. I mean, I was actually like so hungry before and looking through it. I'm like, I wonder what we would order if we went.
So my friend had... I was a maid of honor. I threw her a bachelorette party in Atlantic City, and we went to one of the oldest Italian restaurants
in the city. Do you remember what it was called?
I'm trying to actually look it up right now from this like ancient back and forth from 2014, but I can't find it.
That's fun. There's also like an Italian restaurant there that I was going to talk about, but there wasn't enough kind of content on it, but it was a kind of a speakeasy Italian restaurant that like is unlisted. Now you can kind of find the number, but it's supposed to be like the most fun place. It's in like the basement of like an old house, but it's supposed to be one of the best Italian places like in New Jersey.
Yeah, I think we talked about this. So I think that this, also I planned a whole bachelorette party in Atlantic City, which was brilliant of me.
Was it so fun?
It was just really fun because, first of all, there were like 12 of us and we all shared 2 hotel rooms.
Cool.
And we all like drove out there and we were staying in a casino hotel and very few of us cared about gambling. So we like went to the beach. And then some people went off to gamble and the rest of us just kind of wandered around. And then we went to this old Italian restaurant, which was a little bit further away than I realized, but it was still fine. We all walked over there. And then, we partied at the restaurant. We went back and I got us a karaoke room, which is basically a glass encased room in the middle of a karaoke bar. So,
you're
in the room, but like everyone can see you and you can see them, but they can't hear you. And so it was really cool.
That's so fun. That sounds amazing.
It was really fun.
How cool. I really want to go. I wish maybe when I don't really want to say when this is all over, because that doesn't feel like there's like an actual end date, but maybe in 5 years when this is actually officially behind us, we can go to Atlantic City. I think it'd be really fun. And next week I want to talk about like AC foods, because there's like so many fun foods from Atlantic City. My mom was telling me some of her like favorite old beach foods from down the shore and stuff when she was a kid from Jones Beach. But fun beach sand food. Sun.
Oh, I found it. It's Angelo's Fairmont Tavern.
Oh, was it an old place?
It's very old and very affordable, which is why we got it.
Oh, cool! That's so fun.
And everyone had to pay $75 for the whole weekend. It's hilarious.
Really? That's it?
Yeah.
Mhm. That's incredible. That sounds so great. How fun.
Yeah.
What are your top 3 favorite beach foods that are not inappropriate?
Well, I have a tradition where I go to Fort Tilden, but we park in the Jacob Riis parking lot. We stop and we get a frozen beverage and make the roughly mile-long hike out to where we like to go.
Nice.
But at that place, they also have delicious tater tots. I like to eat tater tots.
Yum.
But generally, I'm not really into eating on the beach itself. It's too hot, sand gets in stuff, and I'm just like a purist. I just want to like swim, lay out, maybe have a beer, but maybe just one, and then tan and read.
Interesting. Okay, that's good. That's good beach. That's good beach meat. I like to bring fruit, cold fruit to the beach. Watermelon is always good. I like to bring like chips or pretzels. And then my number one's got to be like when I go with my mom, like every time it's like 100% of the time, not most of the time, Bobby always makes chicken salad and cucumber salad with like watermelon in it. And like every single time she'll be like, do you want 2 separate cups? Because she puts it in cups. And there's always like tons of like alt chips, like bean chips and tortilla chips and stuff. Sometimes regular potato chips. And I'm like, no, I like the cucumber salad with like the vinegary dressing on top of the chicken salad. But my mom doesn't like to combine her food together like that. So she like can't accept that I do. So seriously, like after hundreds, maybe thousands of times of the same conversation, she still asked me if I want the cucumber on top of the chicken. I'm like, yeah, that's how I like it, Bobby. But yeah, that would be my number one favorite thing. Love it. So good. It's like cold. She keeps it on tons of ice. And I will really recommend, it's a great pro tip, that like if you are bringing a salad or something like actually hefty to the beach to eat, like bring a cup.
Yeah, you have to put something in it.
Instead of a plate. Because a plate, yeah, sand will blow on it. But a cup is protected.
It's just, yeah. And I guess a cooler. I don't like to bring a lot of stuff to the beach either. So that's part of it.
totally. So my stepdad has this contraption called a Rolleasy. Call us Rolleasy. You could be advertising on America's Favorite Podcast right now, on America's Favorite Beach Podcast. But it's a Rolleasy. It's like these two giant wheels and like basically a hand truck, and like you just roll it down the beach. You just put all your shit on there and you just roll it, so you don't have to lug everything. It's basically like, there should be an infomercial for it. Like, are you tired of your cooler falling in the sand and all your grapes getting sandy? Well, you need a Rolleasy. It's pretty amazing. Highly recommend. How do you feel? Where do you stand on kite flying?
Kite flying?
Yeah.
I've only done it once.
Okay.
It was fine.
Great beach activity. I love it.
I'm more into playing catch on the beach.
Yeah, catch is good on the beach. Catch is really good. How do you feel about being buried in the sand? Will you bury someone else?
No.
No. No burying. I'm pro burying.
I'm all about laying still on the beach.
I know that about you. I've been to the beach with you a couple times. I know your vibe.
Yeah.
I just kind of like move a good 100 yards away from you and let you do your own thing. So apparently the Long Island beaches yesterday were closed down because there's been
medical waste.
No, mon frere. Because of shark sightings. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I have the Shark Tracker app, so I know every shark sighting. Although they're in Massachusetts every summer. There's always a million shark sightings, and they close the beach for an hour.
Right.
And they let you go right back out there. There was even one that just alerted me yesterday that was like, shark seal predation beach will be closed for 1 hour. And I'm like, I don't want to go back in that water after a shark just ate a seal that they think humans are.
Oh, that's crazy. That's nuts. And someone got killed in Maine, right? Just this weekend, this past weekend. That's very sad. That's a terrible, terrible way to die. I recently watched Jaws. And that's a fucking scary movie. Holy shit. That movie is scary.
I love it. It's one of my favorites.
I love it too, man. Is Quint the best character in any film ever? Who is that man? What else was he in, that guy?
I have no idea. He's hot.
He's truly hot. And Quint, you could catch it, but you're definitely dead by this point. You died in the movie and probably also in real life. But he's hot.
My favorite thing to do is read the title of an article and never read it and wonder what it said. And it was like, Jaws is one of the greatest movies of all time. How did it spawn one of the worst sequels of all time? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've never seen Jaws 2.
Oh, me neither.
It's a 3D movie.
No. I think there's like a Jaws 3 and 4. I wonder, is Richard Dreyfuss in any of these films?
No.
Hmm.
Jaws 2 is apparently, they're all really bad, all the remakes or the sequels, but Jaws 2 is apparently really, really bad. And I'm like, I should definitely see that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if it's saying it's bad, I want to watch it. Yeah, the beach, man, it's mystical, it's mysterious. Sometimes it's full of needles, sometimes it's full of sharks.
Sometimes it's full of medical waste.
Exactly, all kinds of medical waste.
Raw sewage. Oh, I have a friend who... Is it you? I have a friend who swam at Fort Tilden last year or the year before when there was a lot of sewage issues out there, and they got sick.
Ew, no, it was not me. That's why I don't swim at city beaches. And I'm not trying to, like, grab a poop. When I was a kid, we went to Splish Splash. My stepsister fucking reached her hand out and just, like, fucking Caddyshack style, grabbed a whole poop.
What is Splish Splash?
Splish Splash is actually literally dubbed America's Favorite Water Park. But it's, I think that's, like, their slogan. But it's, like, a big water park in Long Island.
Ah.
So you can imagine the types of, like, amazing, glorious people that are there at Long Island's favorite water park. It's crazy. My mom, God bless her, I never realized how much... You know, when you're young, you're just like, oh, I'm at Splish Splash, this is so fun. And you don't realize how much it actually been, you know? My mom just, like, would take us and, like, float along the lazy river and a bunch of kid pee.
I mean, the great thing about those places is there's enough chlorine in there to, like, rip your skin off, so there's no germs. But my mom used to take my sister and I to a similar water park that I wish I could remember the name of it, because we were, like, obsessed with it. But there was no even like lazy river for her. So she was just like literally standing on the side, no shade.
Oh.
Watching her two small children fuck around. And our favorite thing was like this giant mushroom that sprayed water down on you. So like, you know, for like 2-year-olds, this is fun. But like for my mom, she was like, this is boring as hell.
I know. Kind of makes me sad. It's like one of those happy, sad things. You have memories of your parents and it's like really sweet, but like also kind of sad.
Well, they loved us, so it's fine for them, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, my dad was telling me, this is, like, also kind of happy sad. So when my parents got divorced, he had custody of us for a while, and he was talking about, I was like, remember, Dad, when we went to Kings Island, which is the nearest big amusement park to Indianapolis, which is in Ohio? Okay. So it's, like, 2, maybe 3 hours away. Maybe 2 hours away. But he was talking about how he would drive us there and then be at the park with us all day long and then drive home and practically fall asleep at the wheel
after
he went by himself with us.
Oh, Dad.
I know. I don't really remember those visits. I remember us being bigger and like my step family going and stuff, but
yeah.
I was like, aw, Dad. Also, that must have been like a nice thirst trap. Like if you were at an amusement park and you saw this hot dad with 2 daughters, wouldn't you be like, hello?
Was your dad hot?
Yeah, he was hot.
Really? A hot dad? Can you send a picture?
What?
Can you send me a picture? As I mentioned, I'm really lonely. I could really... I would appreciate a picture, an old picture of your hot dad to get me through the night.
Time has withered him away along with his job. He was also talking about how he never got to go on vacation because he was paid hourly when he was young. And because my sister's talking about going on vacation. Well, I've been unemployed for like 20 months, but like he's like, my sister's going on vacation with her boyfriend and his family, and they invited me to come. And he's like, I don't know how you guys go on these vacations. I never got to go on vacation until I was in my 60s or my 50s. And I was like, well, they stole your youth, Dad.
Oh, Dad.
It's true, though. He wasn't able to go on vacation.
Oh, Dad. That sucks. Well, send me a younger picture, then, before, you know, time took its toll on him, please.
Okay. I don't have any on my phone. I'll find something for you.
Yeah, if I ask him just to send, even just a dick pic would be fine.
Ew! My father.
If you're listening, Ted, send a dick pic.
Well, now he can never listen to this episode, ever.
Where are you going to go on vacation to?
They're going somewhere that I forget already because I don't think I'm going to go. Maybe okay, great. I'll go.
That sounds amazing. You should definitely go. It's beautiful that they're this time of year.
Yes, in October is when they're going.
Ooh, that's a good time for vacay. All right, well, life is a beach and then you die. Am I right, everyone? This was a great episode. Made me want to go to the beach, but it's gonna rain any minute, so I'm not going to.
Sure is.
And I love you very much.
Thank you.
Hasta la pasta salad, that's a good thing to eat on the beach.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay, love you. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.